welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, bringing you broadcasts from radio's golden era. I'm your host, Mark Levonier, bringing you horror in this hour. Later on, it's Inner Sanctum from 1945, but first, The Mysterious Traveler, with the story Death Has a Cold Breath, a Mutual Broadcasting System episode from March 29th, 1949.
By Robert A. Arthur and David Cogan, and starring tonight two of radio's outstanding personalities, Frank Reddick and Jan Miner, in an original play titled Death Has a Cold Breath.
This is the Mysterious Traveler, inviting you to join me on another journey into the realm of the strange and the terrifying. I hope you will enjoy the trip. And it will thrill you a little and chill you a little as we discover that death has a cold breath. Your name is Andy Marlowe. Once you were a very successful publicity agent. But this morning, as you slouch behind your big mahogany desk, you feel terrible. You're nursing a hangover. You're worrying about the IOUs you've been passing out the last few months to certain rather tough individuals who run gambling houses. You're slipping. Slipping fast. Your bankroll is gone. Your girl Julie, who's just as hard and beautiful as the diamond she loves to wear, is looking for greener pastures. And you're on the skids. Unless you come up with a smart idea. You stare at your appointment pad with bleary eyes. The first name on it is Harold Farrington. Harold Farrington, the matinee idol of 20 years back. Now he's a has-been ham. You almost tell your assistant to send him away, but you change your mind and have him sent in.
Andy, old boy, you're looking splendid. I just got back from Florida. Thought I'd drop in and say hello.
Sit down, Harold, and cut out the hot air. You haven't the price of a trip to South Jersey, much less Florida, and I know it.
Always bluffing direct, Andy. That's what I like about you. Yes, it's embarrassing to admit it, but I am financially substandard at the moment.
If it's a touch, Harold, the answer is no.
I wouldn't dream of asking you for a loan, Andy. I want to retain you, to enlist your services, to put me once again on the front pages. Remember 6 months ago, you dreamed up that idea of a national theater that I hoped to found. That got me nice headlines, Andy.
Yes, but you didn't get a job out of it. I'm going to be frank with you, Harold.
Of course, old man, of course.
The only way you'll ever work on Broadway again is to get a job in the street cleaning department.
Andy, but I know you're only joking. Just remind the public of me and the women will clamor to see me again. I've always had success with the women, you know.
The answer is no. I like to get paid for my services.
But you will, Andy. 6 months ago, for your last campaign, I made you sole beneficiary in my will. You'll collect when I die.
Sole beneficiary in your will. What a laugh. I think I fell for your line about having trust funds that would pay off when you died. I checked up later. You don't even own a spare suit of clothes.
I admit I exaggerated. I confess it.
Oh, that's mighty white of you.
However, this might interest you. A letter that was forwarded to me last week. Read what it says.
6 pages in a woman's handwriting. Reeking with gardenia perfume. Phooey.
It's from a wealthy widow in Boston. 25 years ago, she was an admirer of mine. Her name is Abby Wilson, Mrs. Abby Wilson, and she's worth $500,000.
Harold, you bore me. So does Mrs. Abby Wilson. Now get to the point, will you?
I am, Andy. She's ill, slowly dying. And having read about my plan to start a theater, which I would run in the interest of a free, untrammeled stage, she decided to make the dream possible by leaving me all her money when she dies. Now, don't you see, Andy, that will of mine is now worth something. When Mrs. Abby Wilson dies, I'm a rich man.
Pipe dreams, Harold. She's probably a crackpot in an old lady's home. And to show you what I think of your will, in which I'm sole beneficiary, Let's see. It ought to be in this drawer here. Yeah, here it is. Now, watch, Harold. There. There's your precious will where it belongs, in the wastebasket. Now, get out of here, you old has-been. I'm busy.
Your exasperation finally has gotten the better of you, Andy. You kick Harold Farrington out. Then, feeling worse than ever, you slump in your chair again. You're still slouched there half an hour later when the telephone rings.
Hello.
Hello, darling.
Oh, hello, Julie.
My. The Wonder Boy sounds as if he had a hangover this morning.
No, I'm all right. Just catching a little cold, that's all.
Oh, then you'll probably be glad to have me break our date for tonight.
Break our date?
Yes. I won't be able to make it tonight, Andy. So sorry.
Why won't you be able to make it? I've had those tickets for weeks.
I'm flying out to the coast at midnight, sweetheart. Bill Wentworth is throwing a really big house party, and then a cruise on his yacht afterwards.
What?
He phoned last night to invite me, and I accepted.
Julie, you can't walk out on me like this. Just because Wentworth has money.
And you have charm, Andy. But the charm's been wearing a little thin lately. And so has your bankroll. So goodbye, darling. See you around.
Julie, wait.
Boy, little gold diggers. I'll get another bankroll somehow, and she'll come running back. I know Julie.
For a moment, Andy, you daydream about being rich again. But you're rudely interrupted by the sound of an argument outside, and your office door opens.
Hello, Marlowe. Your office boy didn't want to let me in, but I persuaded him I had business with you.
Oh, hello, Rocky. I'm glad you dropped in.
Yeah.
I've been planning to get in touch with you. I've got a big deal in the fire.
Yeah?
Yeah, you're going to get a big fee out of it.
Oh, I hope you do, Andy, for your sake.
So, Rocky, I just wanted to ask you if you could just wait a few days on his IOUs. I'll really be flush.
Nobody ever said Rocky Smith wasn't a reasonable man. What's your idea of a few days?
Well, naturally, I don't get my fee until my client begins to see himself in the headlines, so... Well, how about 60 days, Rocky?
Because I never got past the eighth grade, Marlowe. But 60 seems to me considerably more than a few. I'll let you have 3 days. And that's all.
When he's gone, you hastily pour yourself a drink, Andy. Just then your telephone rings. You let it ring. What can it be but more bad news? Finally, the ringing gets on your nerves. You answer it.
Hello?
Hello, is this Mr. Andrew Marlowe?
Yes, this is Marlowe speaking.
Well, my name is Phelps, Mr. Marlowe. I'm calling from Boston.
Yes, Mr. Phelps.
Well, Mr. Marlowe, I'm very anxious to contact Mr. Harold Farrington. I believe he's a client of yours.
Well, you could call it that. Yeah, he was here. Left about half an hour ago.
Oh, well, can you possibly locate him for me, Mr. Marlowe? It's rather important. You see, I represent the estate of the late Mrs. Abby Wilson. I'm anxious...
Wait a minute. Did you say the estate of the late Mrs. Abby Wilson?
Oh, yes, Mr. Marlowe. Mrs. Wilson died day before yesterday. And it appears that her new will leaves everything she owns to Mr. Farrington. I believe she was once an admirer of his.
Oh, yes. I know all about that, Mr. Phelps. I'll tell you, I'll locate Harold for you. You just leave it to me.
Well, I certainly appreciate it, Mr. Marlowe. I'd like him here for the probating of the will. Of course, as soon as the news gets out...
He goes on talking, but you're not listening, Andy. Your mind is working like lightning now. So that crazy story of Harold's about a rich widow leaving him everything was true. Like a fool, you tore up Harold's will, making you his heir. There must be some way to save the situation. Then it comes to you. The whole plan in one brilliant inspiration.
So, Mr. Marlowe, I want to...
Oh, Mr. Phelps, excuse me, please, but...
Yes, Mr. Marlowe?
If you let me handle all the publicity, I can keep it dignified and still make it a valuable asset to Mr. Farrington's plan.
Oh, yes, I can understand that.
Now, if you'll see to it that nobody else hears about this until you and me and Mr. Farrington can get together...
Why, I think that can be managed, Mr. Marlowe.
Good. Then I'm going to hang up now and find Farrington. And when I do, I'll phone you. So, goodbye for now, Mr. Phelps.
You hang up and snatch that torn-up will from the wastebasket. Carefully, you paste the torn will together with scotch tape. Then you set out to find Harold Farrington. You try his rooming house first.
No, Mr. Farrington ain't in. I don't know where he is, and I don't care. Unless he comes back with the $35,000 rent he owes me. He might try Tim O'Sullivan's saloon around the corner. That's where he usually hangs out.
You hurry to the corner saloon. The actor's not there. Desperately perspiring in your anxiety, you try all the other local saloons. At last you find him. In a corner table in the cheapest bar of them all. You can see he's almost fire-eyed.
Well, this is my good old friend, Landy. Have a drink. It's not good liquor, but it's cheap. That's his great recommendation, isn't it?
Yes, I'm sorry, Harold. I can't drink now. I've hunted you up to apologize. I was only joking this morning. I am going to put on a campaign for you. I'm going to get your name in all the papers.
Well, that's mighty fine, and he calls for a celebration. Waiter, two more.
You sit down, Andy, controlling your impatience. You bring out the damaged will and get Harold to initial each torn section. Then you tell him about your publicity scheme for him. He's to disappear, you explain, after threatening to kill himself.
Threaten to kill myself, man? To die, to sleep, perchance to dream. Aye, there's the rub. For in that sleep of death, what dreams may come when we have shuffled off this mortal coil must give us pause. Shakespeare, Andy. All right, sounds like a good scheme. I'll cooperate.
Your plan is working, Andy. Working beautifully. You get Harold Farrington into the phone booth. You phone Ross of the Daily Ledger, and Farrington talks to him.
Hello, Ross. This is Harold Farrington. Just wanted to tell you, I'm going to play a big role soon in the tragedy of man. I'm going to play the corpse. What am I talking about? I'm just trying to tell you, old boy, the time has come to ring down the curtain. Going to end the little drama of Harold Farrington. Hello. Andy, how do you like that? He said I was drunk, and he hung up.
Yes, your scheme is working beautifully. You have Harold Farrington phone all the critics and tell them he's going to kill himself. But then Farrington collapses. Desperately, you realize you have to have help. You telephone Julie. You persuade her to bring her car and meet you. You show her the will. Tell her about Mrs. Abby Wilson.
Surely, Julie, you understand. If this will is legal, I'll come to $500,000 soon.
I understand that, darling. But just how are you going to collect? I mean, suppose dear Harold decides to stay alive and then changes his will.
He won't. How long can he live drinking as he does? He's on his last legs.
You mean you'll keep him supplied with free liquor until he obligingly drinks himself to death, Andy, dear?
Yes, something like that. I haven't time to tell you the details now, but somebody has to get Harold to my cabin up in the woods and keep him hidden there. That's your job, Julie. Get him there, keep him there, and don't let anybody know he is there. Darling, for both our sakes, say you'll do it.
Well, it means missing Bill Wentworth's party, but all right, I'll do it. Only, Andy, darling, this scheme of yours had better pay off.
So that's taken care of. Julie starts off for your secluded cabin in the mountains with Harold Farrington. You promise to join her the following night. The next morning, you get busy on the phone, ostensibly trying to trace Farrington. Among others, you call your old friend, the theatrical critic, Paul Milton.
Yes, Paul, I am worried about Harold Farrington. It's no gag. I know he called you yesterday and threatened to commit suicide. And I think he meant it. I'm really worried about him. Okay, I'll keep looking. See you soon, Paul. We'll have a drink together.
Paul Milton's skepticism is typical. And it's just what you want. Last of all, you call another old friend, Captain Harry Banning, in the Bureau of Missing Persons.
Oh, now, Harry, I'm not trying to drum up a story. Farrington really is missing. I want you to put out a missing persons notice on... Well, if that's the way you feel about it, I'll have to find him without any help from the police.
You hang up, and you're pleased, Andy. Very pleased. That evening, you catch the train for the little town of Ridge Gap, where your cabin is located. At the Ridge Gap station, you slip away into the darkness without being noticed. It's bitterly cold, but you walk the 2 miles to your cabin. There you find Julie and Harold Farrington having a drink in the living room. After the necessary greetings, you waste no time in getting down to business.
Well, kids, we're rolling. The editors are beginning to believe in your suicide, Harold.
Andy, I'm not so sure that the suicide is a good publicity angle. The more I think about it...
Of course it's a good angle. Isn't it, Julie?
Why, of course it is, Harold. Why, it'll get the critics to writing long, appreciative articles about you. The kinds of thing the producers all notice.
Well, maybe, but I still think...
Harold, you hired me to do the thinking. Now, listen. You write me a long letter of farewell. Understand?
A letter of farewell. Well, I could do that with the quotations from my great plays, Macbeth, Hamlet...
Well, that's it, Harold.
Yes. I'll take the letter back to New York with me. I'll call all the critics. I'll get a couple of them to rush up here with me. Now, just before we get here, you take one sleeping tablet. Then pretend to be unable to wake until we've worked over you for at least half an hour. You got it?
Yes, of course, I could do that.
And look absolutely on the level. Tomorrow evening, your name will be headlines from coast to coast.
Well, if you're sure, Andy...
I'm positive. Now, sit down at my desk and start writing that suicide note. And be sure to apologize to me for using my cabin. You understand, Harold?
You leave Harold Farrington busy writing the suicide letter. You take Julie into the next room to tell her the rest of your plan.
And as soon as he finishes that letter, Harold's going to die. You understand that, don't you, Julie?
Die? Andy, you didn't say anything about that when you sent me up here with him. I'm not going to have anything to do with murder.
Harold will drink himself to death in another 6 months. What difference does it make if he goes now? It means $500,000 to us, me and you. It's perfectly safe. By now, half New York knows Harold was threatening to kill himself.
You go on talking, persuading her. And when you want to be, you can be very, very persuasive.
Maybe a few hours.
At last, Julie gives in to your scheme.
All right, Andy, I'll do it. But let's get it over with quickly.
You go back into the living room. Harold has finished writing his farewell to you and the world, and he's reading it aloud with great self-appreciation.
Out, out, brief candle. Life's but a walking shadow, a poor player that struts and frets his hour upon the stage and then is heard no more. Oh, there you are, Andy. Listen, I think this is rather good.
He begins at the beginning and reads the whole letter to you. It's what you want, exactly. As he reads, you busy yourself fixing him a drink, and into the drink... You pour the contents of a small bottle. Harold Farrington finishes his letter and waits for your applause.
That's splendid, Harold. Simply terrific.
It nearly made me cry. Just listening to it.
I think without undue modesty, one could say it's good theater. Ooh, is that a drink for me, Andy?
Well, it isn't for anybody else, Harold.
Thank you. I've earned this drink. Well, bottoms up.
He drinks, and in 5 minutes, it's all over. For one last instant, he stares at you accusingly, then his eyes close, and he falls forward on the desk.
He's dead. Perfect, Julie. Couldn't have worked out better.
Well, now what, Andy? Back to New York and come find him tomorrow or the next day?
No. It's all going to be settled tonight.
Tonight?
Yes. There's a very special reason why. I owe some money. But tomorrow I've got to be able to prove I can pay it from the inheritance. Now, we're going to drive to Ridge Gap, have dinner, and pretend we're on our way up here from New York. Then we arrive here, find Harold dead, and phone the sheriff. That's all there is to it.
Andy, now wait a minute.
What is it?
What time is Harold supposed to have died?
Well, sometime last night when I was in New York.
That's impossible. Here's his body. It'll still be warm when the sheriff gets here. The sheriff will know that Harold must have died this evening.
Yeah. That's right. Forgot that. I can't wait till tomorrow. Just can't. I got it.
What?
It's cold out. Only about 15 above zero. No. We'll put Harold out on the terrace, chair and all, for half an hour. And then he'll be cold, plenty cold. It'll seem as if he died hours ago.
Swiftly, you and Julie lift the chair in which Harold Farrington sits. You carry it out on the terrace in the bitterly cold wind. There you leave Harold to cool a bit. Back in the house, you set everything straight, remove all evidence of Julie's having been there. You wait half an hour, 45 minutes. Then you carry Harold back in, chair and all, and pose him properly in front of the desk where his touching suicide note waits. The picture is perfect.
Cold enough now. Feel his forehead.
It's like ice.
Yeah. That's because he died last night, my dear. Now let's go. Have dinner in the village. Make sure we're seen. Then come up here and discover Harold.
Your program goes off without a hitch, Andy. In the village of Ridge Gap, you make sure witnesses see you eating. You tell the waitress you're just on your way to the cabin. Then you drive up and find poor Harold's body. In half an hour, the sheriff is there with the coroner. The sheriff looks around, listens to your story, reads the letter Harold so obligingly wrote, and nods.
Yep. Certainly is a plain enough story, Mr. Marlowe. Poor fella. Down on his luck, decided to end it all. You say you gave him a key to this cabin 6 months ago?
Yes, that's right, Sheriff. 6 months ago, I did a publicity campaign for him, and he used to come up here to work out our plans. I gave him a key then, and he kept it.
And poor Harold crept here to die in hiding.
That's how it goes. Well, I guess there's no use our hanging around any longer. Poor fella's stone cold. Means he died last night or this morning, I guess. Well, Doc, let's phone Williams, the undertaker, and get this over with.
I guess we better wait a mite before we call the undertaker, Sheriff.
Wait? What for?
There's something a bit peculiar here.
Peculiar? Well, what do you mean, Doc?
Let's feel this fellow's forehead. Mighty cold, isn't it?
That's right. Cold as ice. Shows he's been dead quite some time.
Yes, everybody knows that. It's in every detective story. His forehead was as cold as ice. Wish I had a dollar for each time I've read that.
Yes, but I'm afraid you don't get my point. See, a dead body can only cool off to the temperature of the room it's in.
Oh, well, what are you getting at?
Just this. I took the temperature of this suicide. His body temperature's only 45 degrees.
45 degrees?
That's
well, how could that be, Doc? This room is 70 degrees. It ain't possible.
Andy.
Be quiet, Jimmy.
You're right, Sheriff. It isn't possible. Unless this suicide walked outdoors and practically froze himself. He came back in, sat down, and waited for us. And I don't think he did.
What you're saying, Doc, is, it's not suicide. It's murder. And I reckon we got the murderers right here in this room with us. Well, folks, how about it?
Serious traveler again. Dear me, it's a cold wind that blows nobody good, isn't it? Yes, Andy and Julie were persuaded to confess. It wasn't hard to get a confession, since each rushed in to blame the other. Such a clever scheme, too. Not a flaw in it. If only Andy hadn't been in such a hurry to cool the corpse off. The moral is, never rush a corpse. Let it take its own time. Even if it kills you. Oh, that reminds me of next week's story, The Hot Seat. It's about a dim-witted fellow with but one thing in mind, revenge. However, his weapon was not the knife, gun, or poison. It was... Oh, you have to get off here. I'm sorry. But I'm sure we'll meet again. I take this same train every week at this same time.
You have just heard The Mysterious Traveler, a series of dramas of the strange and terrifying. The role of the Mysterious Traveler is played by Maurice Tarplin. This is Jack Farron speaking. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
The Mysterious Traveler, on Tuned To Yesterday from the 29th of March, 1949 on Mutual. This is an hour of horror on Tuned To Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. And now, Inner Sanctum with the story Song of the Slasher, penned by Milton Lewis. And according to my research, this is one of the first national programs he contributed to. Lewis would also write for The Adventures of the Thin Man, even a soap opera from time to time called This Is Nora Drake. This episode first heard on CBS on April 24th, 1945.
Lipton Tea and Lipton Soup present Inner Sanctum Mysteries. Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum. This is your host, Raymond, the gay ghoul. Friends, would you like to fly through the air with a great speed? Do you think you'd enjoy being invisible, huh? Oh, it's easy. All you have to do is become a ghost. And to become a ghost, all you have to do is accentuate the ectoplasm and eliminate the protoplasm. Man! If that doesn't work, we'll introduce you to one of the characters on our show. He'll take care of you.
And that's the truth. What awful people on this show. Wherever do you find them, Mr. Raymond?
Well, it's simple. All you have to do is turn over a rock and out they come crawling.
And just suppose you were looking for decent people. How would you find them?
Oh, well, now, Mary, you were the one who showed me how I'd just go snooping around houses, peering into windows. And I'd find all the nice people drinking Lipton tea.
Oh, dear, there you go making fun again. You know, maybe if you drank Lipton tea, you wouldn't be such a bitter, unhappy person.
All right, Mary. As long as you're in the kitchen, you'd better sharpen up a couple of knives, as our main character tonight is going to use them. A story is called Song of the Slasher. It's an original radio play by Milton Lewis and stars Arnold Moss in the role of Detective Dan Miller. Are you ready? Then gather close and listen. If you find you're getting too many chills and just sitting the fire, huh? A thick, murky fog hangs like a damp veil over the waterfront. Streets are deserted. The buildings loom like tombstones in a cemetery. No living soul can be seen because people who scent stay behind locked doors. Slasher has murdered and mutilated his fifth victim in 8 days. In a drab, lonely little room, a young woman suddenly looks up when she hears a door close.
Well? Well, what's the matter? Can't you speak? Hey, you, get away from me. Get back up. That knife. What are you doing with that knife? You're the slasher. Help! Help me, someone! It's the slasher! Help!
Hello, police headquarters.
Hello? It's the slasher.
What are you talking about?
He's here. 12 Dock Street. He's upstairs. Mr. Nell's apartment. I can hear her screaming now. He's with her. I go upward. I'm an old man. It's the slasher. He's killing her.
Captain. Bye. And that's how it started. The detective is asked to do some queer things in the line of duty. I didn't mind moving down to the dump at the waterfront with my wife if it would help catch the slasher. So when I got the call, I rushed out of my joint and beat it down to 12 Dock Street.
Oh.
Where is he? Where'd he go?
Listen, I...
Don't do that. I'll get you a doctor. And listen to me, sister.
Donnell's her name is. Are they going to send an ambulance?
Yeah, but it won't do her no good.
You were too late.
Did you see the guy who did it?
I saw nobody.
He can't be far. He was here a minute ago.
I heard someone go out the back way.
When?
2 minutes ago.
From that alley down there. Oh, it's so thick you can't see 2 feet ahead of you.
The back way goes into the alley.
Well, then it's him.
The slasher.
I got down to the alley. The radio cars and the men from the precinct were coming. We went through that neighborhood with a sieve. A but we couldn't find the guy who whistled that queer tune.
Is that you, Danny?
Yeah.
Oh. What happened?
Well, you shouldn't have got out of bed, baby.
I was worried.
He got away.
Did he kill another?
Yeah, another dame. It wasn't so foggy I could have seen him. That's how close it was.
And close?
No, nothing to speak of. Hey, look, baby, don't you worry about this. You go back and get some sleep.
I'm frightened, Danny. That man is somewhere in this neighborhood and us living here.
I shouldn't have brought you down here. You're going back to our old place tomorrow.
No, I'm not. I don't want you here alone. And I want to stay with you.
Shut up.
Danny.
Listen. You hear that, don't you? That ain't something I'm hearing in my head, is it?
Danny, what are you...
Answer me. I want to make sure I ain't hearing
something. Well, of course I hear it. It's someone whistling, but why are you acting like this?
Evie. The slash of whistles that tune.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I heard him tonight.
And the killer. The slasher must be somewhere around here.
I'm going out, baby. Lock the door. The whistling was somewhere in the building. I listened. Where was it coming from? My watch. 4:30 in the morning. I walked down the stairs listening for the whistle. I walked on my toes, listened at the other flats. I didn't hear a thing. I went down into the cellar. There was someone there, all right.
Oh! Who's there?
It was Sykes, the janitor. I came closer.
Oh. It's you, Mr. Miller.
Yeah, Mr. Sykes. Hey, what's the matter? You're shaking like you got a fever.
You frightened me.
Why?
I thought you were the slasher.
Yeah?
He's around here, you know. He might be hiding in these shadows. He might be anywhere. Everybody's afraid of him. Everybody.
Yeah, so I hear. Time did you come down here?
4:30, like I do every morning. Why?
See any stranger in the building?
No. I didn't see anyone.
Who lives in the flat below us?
Mr. Trevelyan. Reginald Trevelyan.
Funny name.
He's a funny fella. Never sleeps at night. Wanders around the building whistling to himself.
Whistling to himself?
Yeah. He writes music or something. He got a piano in his place today. Talks crazy sometimes.
Think he's up there now?
Yeah, he never sleeps.
Here.
$20?
Yeah, it's for you.
Why are you giving this to me?
I want you to tell me when Mr. Trevelyan leaves his apartment. Do you get it?
Yeah, but why?
I ain't paying you $20 to ask questions. Upstairs. I know it's kind of late, but can I come in here for a minute?
Of course.
Hope I'm not disturbing you.
No, it's quite all right. You the people who moved in a few days ago?
That's right.
Glad to know you. My name is Reginald Trevelyan.
Dan Miller's mine. You been up all night?
Yes. Why do you ask?
Because maybe you can help me. Someone tried to break into our place at about 4:30 this morning.
Really? Mr. Miller, you think your wife would be very annoyed if I played the piano now?
No. No, I don't think so. She likes music.
Does she? Seems like a charming girl. I noticed her when you first moved in. Very lucky to have such an attractive wife.
Mm-hmm. myself like that very often?
Yes. Especially when I'm working on a new composition. Wait a moment. I think I have it. I've been trying to work out that passage all night. Miss Miller, please get out of here. I want to be alone.
You're a queer, you are.
I'm not in your opinion. Well, what are you waiting for? Get out of here! Get out of here! Oh, you are!
Try it!
I've lost it!
What?
That passage! You see what you've done? I had it a minute ago, and now it's gone! Gone! It's been lately. I keep forgetting things. I'm sorry if I was rude to you. I didn't mean to be.
Mr. Miller. Good night.
Mr. Miller. Is it really true what it says in the papers about the slasher? That he has the whole neighborhood trembling in terror?
Yes.
Lovely. Trembling for their miserable little lives. Worried about their dirty little souls. Shivering in fear in their ugly little rat holes. I knew who the slasher was. I'd embrace him. And give him every penny I had.
Why?
Because I hate them. Because they laugh at me. Because...
check on Trevelyan. Oh, he was a queer one, all right. So queer, I didn't tell Laura about him. I didn't want to scare her. Couldn't arrest him. I didn't have anything on him yet. I lay down to rest. Maybe I heard it in my dream. Maybe not. I heard that whistling again. Same tune. I think that's what woke me. I looked around. Laura. She was gone. And the door was open.
Daddy!
Daddy,
help!
No! I rushed out. The hall was filled with thick fog. In the yellow light, I saw a crumpled heap on the floor. I recognized Laura's bathroom.
That's my boy. He's not the type of low character who goes around murdering his friends and relatives. No, he's so big-hearted he murders anyone. Well, we've kept the blood from flowing long enough. On with the murders. Listen as we hear Arnold Moss as Dan Miller finish that story.
Laura was alive in a dead faint. I scooped her up in my arms and rushed her back to our flat. She opened her eyes a few minutes later.
Daddy.
You're okay, baby.
You were going to kill me.
Yeah, yeah. Drink some of this.
Thanks. Oh, Danny, it was awful.
What happened?
Well, you were asleep. I went out to get some milk, and I heard someone whistling.
Do you remember what?
That same queer melody we heard before, the one the slasher whistled. So I thought I'd help you.
Help me?
I thought I'd see him. I walked quietly down the hall, and there was no one there. Then I turned the corner.
Yeah?
I saw the knife gleam. Someone was hiding in the shadows. He grabbed my neck, and I screamed. I screamed, Annie. I screamed so I thought I'd burst my throat, and then it all went flat.
Did you see him?
No, but I felt his hands on my throat. They were strong hands, fingers like steel, and I...
Lie down. You'll be all right.
He's right here, maybe living in this building.
Well, he won't be here long. I'm calling headquarters.
You know who he is.
I got a good idea. Now, just let me get on that phone and...
Oh, damn it, maybe that's him.
Now, take it easy, kid. Who's there? Just a janitor, baby.
Oh.
What do you want?
He went out.
Trevelyan?
Yeah.
Okay. Laura, get dressed. I want to get you out of here before the trouble starts. I'll be gone for a few minutes.
Where are you going?
With Mr. Sykes. You got a key, Sykes?
Yeah, but I'll have to go along with you. You can't take anything.
You know what this badge means?
You a detective?
Yeah. Now, let's go.
What are you doing here? Just looking for the slasher?
I'll write your book about it, pal. Here's his joint. Open the door.
All right. But you'll have to hurry. He may come back any minute.
All I want is enough evidence. I'll take care of him when we get it.
The door's open. Come on in.
It was 8 in the morning. But it could have been 8 at night. The fog was so thick. I knew this was it. I couldn't take any chances. I had to get all the evidence on it before I nabbed him. And I had to get it without him being wise.
What are you looking for?
Knives. We know he's got at least 3.
I don't see none.
Neither do I. Maybe it's a bum steer. I could be wrong. Hey, what's this? Music.
He's always writing it.
I used to be a choir boy once. They taught me how to read them notes. I wonder if I still can.
Why?
Because I think this may be a tune I'm looking for. Let me see.
That song.
Did you ever hear it before?
Yeah.
Bet you did. He's always whistling it. I heard it myself when he killed the last one. Gotta find those knives.
You better hurry. I think he just went out to get some breakfast.
I looked everywhere. Couldn't find the knives. I couldn't bring a guy in just because I heard a song. I found a bunch of keys. They were trunk keys. But there was no trunk.
I think I hear him coming.
Never mind what you think. Where does he keep his trunk?
In the storeroom in the cellar. He's always going down there for things.
Hold it.
That's him.
Yeah. Come here. There's room behind this upright piano for both of us.
What, the piece of...
Shut up. Same tune that led me to him. I reach for my gun just in case. Suddenly, the sweat oozed out of me. It was sweat that felt like ice. I didn't have my gun. I remembered I took it off when I laid down to rest.
All wrong. Why can't I get it right?
Out again. Come on, Sike.
I told you to hurry before.
I hear him going down those stairs. It's safe to go now. All right, Sikes. We're going to open that trunk in the store.
Here's his trunk, Mr. Miller.
This key should open it.
The knives?
Yeah. The knives. Look at them. Covered with blood. Sikes, go to the police precinct. Tell him Miller sent you. Tell him to come over here with as many men as they can spare.
All right.
I took the knives and put them under my coat. Went up to my room.
Yes, I'm leaving. I'll be home soon.
I could hear Laura talking on the phone with someone. I opened the door.
Oh, I better hang up now. Danny just came in. Goodbye, darling.
Who are you talking to?
Mother, I'm ready to go.
Oh, wait a minute. There's no rush.
Mr. Danny, that man at the piano. Sounds like the
Thatcher
song.
Yeah.
What have you got there?
My gun. Come on, baby, we're going.
That man playing the piano. Are you sure he's a Thatcher?
Yeah. Positive.
Mr. Danny, you're hurting my arm.
Oh, sorry, honey. Nervous. That's his place. Come on in with me.
Come in with
you? Yeah. Figured out a way to trap him.
But Danny,
don't be scared, baby. You'll be okay.
Oh. You?
Yeah, Mr. Trevelyan. I'd like you to meet my wife.
I'm delighted.
How do you do? Would you like to hear something? It's a composition I've just completed. I've had a great deal of trouble with it, but I think I've got it right now.
Oh!
you, Slasher. You stupid swine. You idiot. Why did you come here and dance? My music. Not even this sound.
Danny. You murdered him.
Yeah.
Why?
You'll find out.
What are you going to do with that knife?
It's one of his knives. Stand still, Laura.
Danny, don't me!
In a minute.
Danny, what's the matter with you?
You got it coming to you, too.
Why?
I know who you were talking to on that phone. It wasn't your old lady.
What?
It was Jerry Boyd, that guy who lives next door, wasn't it? Answer me, wasn't it?
No, no!
Lie to me!
So this is why you made me come down here with you. You planned this all along.
That's right, baby. And that's why I had you insured for 40 grand.
Oh.
You made one bad mistake. You married a smart cookie.
You're going to kill me and blame it on the Slasher.
Yeah.
No! Help me, someone! Help me! Daddy! Don't!
When it was over, I wiped the knife clean of fingerprints. And then I smeared Trevelyan's hand over the handle. I knew what to do. Made it look good, made it look perfect. There's a way to get away with murder. And I found it. I thought.
Go on with the report, Nolan.
Well, Captain Quinney, after I sent Sykes to the precinct, I went upstairs for my gun. My wife wasn't there. And got the gun, and I heard a scream. I rushed to his place. I opened the door. I saw Laura. The second I thought I'd pass out.
Yeah?
He grabbed a knife and come at me, and I shot him and killed him. Oh, Laura.
She was insured for $40,000, wasn't she?
Yeah. 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 Well, what difference does that make now?
A lot of difference, Miller. I want you to meet someone. Come in, Sykes.
Yes, Captain.
Did you hear Detective Miller's report clearly?
Yes, sir.
Was he telling the truth?
No. He lied.
What are you talking about?
I didn't go to the police when you told me. I hid in the cellar. I saw you go upstairs. I saw you get your wife and go to Trevelyan's place. I listened at the door. I heard you shoot Trevelyan and then murder your wife.
Captain, the man's insane.
Yes, Miller. A homicidal maniac. I'll take away his coat. You see? He's handcuffed.
I don't get it.
He's the Slasher.
He? It's impossible. I told you about that melody. Why, it's still on Trevelyan's piano.
Trevelyan copying down that melody after he heard Sykes whistle it.
Yeah. I whistled the whole thing for him.
But the knives I found in Trevelyan's trunk...
I put them there. I knew who you were.
Sykes was trying to frame Trevelyan. He's made a complete confession, Laura.
But how did you find out
that... you asked us to check on Trevelyan, we discovered that he's quite a famous, if eccentric, composer. I checked up on the other people in the building at the same time. I found out that Sykes escaped from the State Institute for the Insane 2 years ago. He's confessed.
Yeah. I'm the Slasher. Why should Trevelyan become famous for what I'd done?
You had a perfect crime all figured out, Miller. But you made one little mistake. You decided the wrong person was the Slasher. Even a copper can't pull a perfect one, Miller.
So I'm telling you all this because in 10 minutes I won't be able to tell nobody anything. Ever since I made my report, I've been hearing that song in my head. Like somebody whistling it. Soon I won't hear that either. It's a nice tune. Kind of sad. Tonight's story is
your wife. Avoid stress. If that doesn't work, get a carving knife. Well, now, if you weren't too cut up by tonight's story, let me tell you about next week's gory little tale. It's about a beautiful woman who holds your hand, tells you about the future. Of course, she's kind of pessimistic. She sees a man with a knife stuck in his throat, the girl waving gaily from the gallows. And listen to this. Our star will be the glamorous motion picture actress, Wendy Berry. Let's make it a day, huh? Oh, by the way, this month's Inner Sanctum Mystery novel is The Lucky Sif by Craig Wright. And now I guess it's really time to close that squeaking door until next week at the same time when Lipton Tea and Lipton Soup bring you another Inner Sanctum Mystery directed by Hyman Brown. So until then, good night. Pleasant dreams.
Inner Sanctum, untuned to yesterday from April 24th, 1945 on CBS. And that wraps up this hour of horror, untuned to yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from the golden age of radio. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for listening.